What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And this is a good place for us, in fact, to pivot now to Donald Trump's response to Klaus Schwab and the Great Reset, which is a very, very strong response, in my opinion. Trump is openly repudiating the Great Reset. We're going to play a few clips, and these are from his speech at Davos, at the World Economic Forum at Davos, that was held in Switzerland in January 2020, right at the beginning of the year. So before COVID had locked everything down, and at the height of the roaring American economy. What?
Just the grin. he knows he's on top of it.
Well, he does. I mean, he was. He was like, so, I mean, what, you know, the quote there, Trump, employment at 50-year low. Yeah, I mean, there was no question that Trump had a roaring economy at the time. And the sort of left-wing media didn't contest this. What they would say is, oh, this was Obama's achievement. Yeah, yeah. And that's not an unfair thing to say. You know, it did, as you know, you can look at the graphs and you see it's going up under Obama, but Trump continues this.
I was just laughing at how he looks, because he looks like he's enjoying rubbing it in those people's faces.
He does a bit. But this was generally a very good speech. And overall, though, it's a total repudiation of their agenda. Trump's agenda is the sort of America First agenda, where he points out that, look, following my sort of, you know, low tax, low regulation trade policies, and essentially the ethos of what he's describing is delivering decision making power back to the local level, a sort of decentralization. He says this is an agenda that can succeed, essentially unlocking the human potential of the citizens, and he has the receipts to prove it. He lays claim to them being like inclusive and universal economies because, well, I mean, it kind of is. You know, anyone can do it, and therefore, why shouldn't you also do it? Should we play the first clip?
Today, I hold up the American model as an example to the world of a working system of free enterprise that will produce the most benefits for the most people in the 21st century and beyond. A pro-worker, pro-citizen, pro-family agenda demonstrates how a nation can thrive when its communities, its companies, its government, and its people work together for the good of the whole nation.
Right, so Trump is proposing here the complete opposite paradigm to what Klaus Schwab has been proposing, as far as I'm concerned. Like, I love the way he frames it. I hold up the American model, American system, as an alternative model. You know, because what, on one hand, what Trump has here is something that works in practice. It doesn't need to work in theory. We don't need to understand how this works, even though I think we do understand how this works. He can point to real empirical results. He can say this works. You know, I've raised standards of living, unemployment's all-time low, everyone feels like they've got more money in their pockets, everyone feels optimistic. And even now, like, even after the COVID thing, it was 53 or 59% of Americans said they felt better off now than they did before, before Trump. And so there are real sort of receipts to what he said here. He's got something concrete. Whereas on the other side, Klaus Schwab has a lot of theory. He has a lot of calculations. He has a lot of assumptions built into what he's doing. And none of this is tested. And frankly, I think this is the problem with these sort of top-down central command economies and command societies of the 20th century and earlier. I think this is why they failed. They don't take into account human action, human enterprise, and the desire for autonomy that people have and express in their daily lives. Whereas Trump is basing his model on this assumption, and he can show that it's been successful. What's your rebuttal?
It's not.
You were looking critical.
No. I wasn't meant to. I wasn't meaning to.
That's okay.
I just wanted to say that through it, this is half an hour long, and yeah. And what throughout. The overall impression that you get when watching it is that he uses a lot of the same words and same phrases as the other people
he's,
do.
He's adopting their rhetoric. Yeah.
But he's framing it in a different way. So you get an entirely different impression of it, even though a lot of the content is actually very similar. So he's appealing to their values, which makes sense. So he's saying, oh, the 1% is not the beneficiary of this. It's actually
the common person,
a different group which benefits from X the most, right? And he's also saying we need to work together. He's saying that we're planting a trillion trees. We've adopted this from the World Economic Forum agenda. Yeah. And so he's saying all these things and saying it saying them in a way that they would approve of.
Yes, that's a really great point. He's annexing to himself the kind of values they're promoting. This is why I said lays claim to their sort of inclusive and universal economies. The difference is that, as he says, this is a model. You know, he's trying to achieve the same goals. Klaus Schwab has a goal. He's saying, I've got the same goal, but I have a different method of getting to the end result. And Trump is the only one who's actually got some results on paper. Everything Klaus Schwab is saying is hypothetical because we haven't done the Great Reset yet, or at least, you know, not in this form. And the next time that, you know, a German economist decides that we should take over the entire economic life of a country, maybe it's worth looking at previous examples of where that's happened and model our expectations accordingly. Yes, I'm very much against communism, frankly. And German economists saying, well, actually, if you just give me the power to run everything, I'll make this perfect. It's like, no, I don't think you will. But I think that Trump has a much more, like I said, decentralized and realistic view of human nature. This is something that we can measure and have measured and see. We have real proof of this. Whereas Klaus Schwab's fantasies aside, like his hypotheticals aside, the only suggestion of how this kind of centralized command economy is going to run is badly, if history is any guide.
I think that Klaus Schwab believes that he can't be a communist if he doesn't believe in communism.
Well, that's okay then. I mean, he did say, I watched one of the presentations they gave, and he did say that he accepts that there must be room for entrepreneurship. It's like, oh, thank you, master.
No, but I meant that what he's promoting is going to make him the leader of the command economy, essentially.
Yes, it is.
And not necessarily only him, but a narrow group of people in the international sphere,
yes.
Right? The party. And so he can be a communist like that, but he wouldn't call himself a communist because he doesn't believe in communism, and that's obvious.
But even though you'll own nothing, you know, you won't own anything. It's like, okay, but that's the goal of communism, Klaus. You know, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. You'll have everything you need. It's like, okay, that is literally communist rhetoric. Like, that's what they were saying. And, I mean, like, unironically, that's what collectivization is. And Trump is promoting the kind of, you know, small holder, you know, the peasant farmer. You know, this is the, and these are the people who are, you know, I don't want to call them peasants, obviously, because it's an archaic language, but like the small independent businessman who runs his small business or his farm or whatever it is, you know.
That's kind of also a bit of nuance to what you said as well, because communism, the classical Marxist communism, says that most people don't owe anything, don't own anything, and only a couple of people own something. And so if you get communism, they will not own those things, and the society will own it. And so you own nothing, and you will own nothing, but you'll be better off because they won't be oppressing you. And so but he's not like that. He's saying, yes, you own something, but you won't. So
it's not communism if I don't call it communism, even if the exact result is communism. So, and this ties in nicely to the way that Donald Trump views the world. And you can see this when he goes off script, right? When Donald Trump goes off script, then you get the real, because I don't know who wrote the this speech he gave at Davos, Stephen Miller, whoever it is, like the very clever people who've arranged a very elegant method of laying out what I'm sure Trump agrees with, but it's clear that he didn't write this himself.
Oh, yeah.
But let's go for the next clip.
Today, I urge other nations to follow our example and liberate your citizens from the crushing weight of bureaucracy. With that, you have to run your own countries the way you want.
See, is that bit the way he goes? Run your own countries the way you want. Because fundamentally, I think Trump is, I guess, what we call a Westphalian. You know, he believes in the national sovereignty, the existence of the nation state, and that the nation state should essentially be autonomous within its own borders. You make your own decisions, and this philosophy, you can see, goes down to the individual who is the king of their own castle. You know, it's very much sort of an English way of looking at the world. And, you know, it's informed the American experience. That's the point of you having property rights and protections with the Constitution in the United States. You know, you can see that Trump is just the inheritor of this tradition. And again, he has results. So what do you want to say?
I wanted to say that I think what she just said is not necessarily implied in that, because he says running country is the way you want. And that could mean what he says, and he would, based on what he says, he would probably prefer that other countries be run in a similar way as the US, because he sees the US as the model of what's working. But at the same time, he says run it the way you want. And so if they should run it the way they want, it doesn't necessarily follow that the elites in those states will want to follow his example in thinking about the world, the economy, and the society the way that you just laid out.
Well, I agree that it doesn't necessarily follow, obviously, but I think that what Trump is trying to do here is be persuasive so that it does follow. You know, whether it is necessary or not, it still follows. Because, I mean, this when he says, I hold up the American system as a model, he's trying to be persuasive. Mm-hmm. You know, he's saying, and he spends an awful lot of this speech laying out at great length the economic successes of the United States under him.
A lot of figures.
And a lot numbers. Of facts and figures. But the thing is, these seem to all be true from the ones that I was already familiar with. I didn't check the rest because, frankly, it all seemed like it was correct. So the ones that I recognized were accurate. So it seems that he is not... I don't think he's demanding that other countries must be run in a certain way. I think he's trying to be persuasive, right? And that in and of itself is completely different to the way that Klaus Schwab is presenting this. Klaus Schwab is presenting necessity and compulsion. You know, he is presenting, no, the world is going to have to be like this or else the world will be destroyed. Give me complete power of all the world's economy. You won't own anything, but you'll be happy. Trust me on this, fellas. Whereas Trump is not demanding, as he says, run your countries how you want, but we hold our model up as a great example of how a country should be run. Here are all our successes. Why don't you emulate us? And to be honest with you, I can't. I find that quite persuasive myself, I have to say.
Yeah, I very much like Trump's approach to other countries being, you do what you want, but you're dumb if you don't do what I do. I think I think that's very persuasive, and it's fair. There's also a case to be made that you have people in other countries which are not as liberal and, I don't know, free, tolerant as some of Western countries. And so in those countries, you have to draw a very strict line between the population and the elites that run the country or the state. And then you have a difficulty in adopting this kind of principle. But if you don't, then you get into like neocon stuff. So it's.
But he's not threatening to enforce it.
No. He's not, and that's what I want to say. That his approach is good, and I think it'd be nice if a lot of other countries adopted this approach in using ridicule as a weapon against other countries, against regimes which are doing terrible things to their own populations, and to say, hey, look at yourselves, like, this is ridiculous, you know, you're a laughing stock.
Yeah.
And so this is a good way, I think, to play on the ego of some of those leaders. Yeah.
But the thing that it's about the assumptions that are built into what he's saying, and like it's an offhand comment, run your countries how you want, but you're idiots, you know, that is what he's saying. But there's an assumption of consent there,
yep.
Whereas there's no assumption of consent with Klaus Schwab. It's all dire necessity, doom and gloom, doom mongering. And in fact,
I actually disagree, because Schwab and World Economic Forum and the whole international arena would see that whole process, the Great Reset, and all those agendas as very consensual in their own view. And the way they view it is that they involve a lot of different people, different pressure groups, different spokespeople of different parts of the population, of the world population. And so they involve all these people in those negotiations, in those debates of how to best implement the Great Reset. And so they view it as if if they invite all of these people and if they all agree on something that is good, that would be nice if happened, then it is necessarily consensual on the broader scale, and you don't need to ask anyone else. Is there someone you forgot to ask? But so because all of the segments of society that you need to account for have been accounted for by their representatives at that venue.
But I
disagree. But that's how they see it.
I will do the pushback on that then. Okay. No, I'm not saying that's your opinion, obviously.
Yeah.
But for me, the question is the coercive nature of the argument that they're making.
Mm-hmm.
It is built on, fundamentally, we're all going to die if we don't do this. So it's very negative. It starts negative and tries to kind of browbeat you into it. And then it demands a kind of universal adherence to a certain set of ideas, mm-hmm. which is not going to happen ever. Under any circumstances, you'll never get everyone agreeing to the same thing. Whereas Trump, we'll go for the next clip, because Trump actually, he does present this in a very positive light, his view. Because, like I said, it's very decentralized, which means, definitionally, I won't be the one orchestrating someone else's life. So they'll have different ideas, they'll do it their own way, but the understanding that we'll, you know, have rules by which we encounter each other is that as far as it comes to when it comes to an agreement in ideas, you know, that's all we need to agree to. And there's no coercion underlying it. But let's go for this clip.
Because this is a time for tremendous hope and joy and optimism and action. But to embrace the possibilities of tomorrow, we must reject the perennial prophets of doom and their predictions of the apocalypse. They are the heirs of yesterday's foolish fortune tellers, and I have them, and you have them, and we all have them. And they want to see us do badly, but we don't let that happen. They predicted an overpopulation crisis in the 1960s, mass starvation in the 70s, and an end of oil in the 1990s. These alarmists always demand the same thing, absolute power to dominate, transform, and control every aspect of our lives. We will never let radical socialists destroy our economy, wreck our country, or eradicate our liberty.
Now, I mean, how is he wrong?
I agree with him completely on this.
He's not wrong. but the difference in approach is night and day. You know, Trump is, putting forward a golden shining visage. This is what the future can be. You know, we're almost there anyway. We're doing very well. You know, we're going to go forward, and it's uplifting. It's positive. It has belief in human capacity. It is not you are going to be a propertyless serf who will be happy on your drugs, combing your porn, and, you know, never having to have anyone interrupt your bubble of consumption, right? Trump is not offering comfort. He's actually offering struggle and difficulty and hardship. But it's an uplifting thing. It's something that is to strive for. Whereas Klaus is saying, well, actually, the managed decline will be managed for you. You know, and if you don't do this, everyone's going to die. We're all going to blow up. You know, all the prophets that he's calling out. I love it, because they were consistently wrong about all of these predictions. And like, and there are more that he could have included. Like in the 70s, we were supposed to be in an ice age by now. And then Al Gore was saying that by 2008 there'd be no polar ice cap. And it's like, look, all of these predictions were nonsense. They were just all nonsense. You know, they were just not true. And I can't help but feel that yes, I don't really. I'm not very inclined to believe the doom mongers now. Well, all of those other prophecies were wrong, but this one's right. So give us absolute power. It's like, no, you are proposing communism. I'm not giving you absolute power. I'm not going to be threatened by the prospect of world destruction. And Trump is presenting a very wholesome way of looking at the world. So I think that I'm very much on Trump's side on this one.
Actually, I wanted to pick up on the phrase that you used, a managed decline.
Yep.
Which is that kind
literally of, what he's asking for. Let's reduce production, reduce.
But not just exactly there, but at a different point in his book, Klaus Schwab says that I don't know exactly what he says, but he equates the present and future, according to him, situation of the Western world to the Japanese economy since the 90s. And he's saying the way that Japan has gone,
mm-hmm.
Europe and the US might face a similar future, yeah. which is a future of not really a growth, kind of stagnation, very little innovation and kind of a stalemate.
The Japanese
like
don't
that.
Innovate.
Not now.
Well, they're the world leaders in sex robots. What's he talking about?
Good point.
What does he think that people will create in their Kuma, in, you know, in like the Kuma coma that they're going to be in?
Maybe Schwab wants to explore the frontiers in sex robots in Europe.
I guess he must. But I mean, like, he's not saying that quality of life in Japan is bad. That's the thing. He's appealing to GDP growth. It's like, well, I don't care about GDP growth. Mm. I care about the quality of life people. And saying that they're not innovating, I don't think that's fair. It's just they're not innovating in ways that he recognizes as being things that of innovation.
No, but what I meant is how the Japanese economy has been looking since the 90s.
Yeah, on his spreadsheets, I'm sure it does come across that way.
No, but like generally that it's consensus again across basically everyone that it hasn't experienced much growth, but also the quality of life is good, but it hasn't improved. And so similar things that people are saying about, for example, the US since the 70s, which is not true, which like that's a myth that's really annoying. But
sorry, what's the myth?
That the productivity of workers in the US has increased, but their wealth hasn't increased since the 70s.
Yeah, that's not true.
It's not. But something...
I mean, they're all there with iPhones going, yeah, our wealth just hasn't improved. That is the wealth. Jackass. Yeah, come on. Yeah. But anyway, sorry.
But with Japan, it's the kind of stagnating economy, the developed stale situation that is not moving anywhere is what has been reported on. And
we have a good economy and a high quality of life. This isn't going anywhere. This is where you want it to be.
No, but it's not a process that is getting better. It's just you're stuck in one place. That's the point.
Yeah, but they're stuck in a good place.
Sure, but that's what Klaus Schwab wants.
Yeah, but he's not going to get it.
Well, that's literally the opposite of what Trump says.
Well, no, like, Trump isn't proposing a utopian future, right? So
he's saying we need to work together, and if we go through struggle, we can improve, and we can achieve a better and better future, and there's going to be progress, right?
Yeah.
And the same way that we have progressed against challenges that we have had in the past, we're going to do the same thing in the future.
But Trump is not advocating that everything's going to be perfect for everyone for all time. Yeah. He's suggesting that there's it's a constant journey. But Klaus Schwab seems to want to. You know, the end result seems to be, the impression that I've got from it anyway, is that there's going to be a kind of final phase of humanity.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying is about Japan.
But I don't know if that's... I mean, I wouldn't call Japan a communist society.
No, it's not a communist society, but it's a stale society.
It's a stable society. You know, that's the complaint. Because there are different ways of looking at it. It's, this is stagnant or it's stable. You know, if it was stagnant and everyone was poor, then yeah, I'd be like, yeah, that's stagnation. But if everyone's got a good quality of life and people are free and able to live, like, is that bad? Is that stagnation? Stagnation has a kind of negative connotation to it. You could use another word like stable, which doesn't have a negative connotation, but that doesn't really push people towards agreeing with your great reset, right? And so it's the way that you frame it that changes your attitude.
I really think that the situation with the Japanese economy is
different
than what you're describing. But I think people are not interested in this to this level of detail.
I know I'm not an expert on the Japanese economy or anything like that, but I'm, as a hypothetical.
Yeah, we can cover it in another time.
But I do think that Klaus Schwab is using terminology that is... How to describe it? Imperative terminology, mm-hmm. right? Whereas you could probably frame the things that Klaus Schwab is describing in terms that do not also contain imperatives to change. Mm-hmm. And that would be an acceptable description of the thing. Not the same necessarily in Japan, but overall.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So one other thing that I've noticed in what he says is that he says it's time for optimism, and he adds it's time for action, and it's that
optimistic whoever, action.
No, but whoever wrote that speech was brilliant, because it's time for optimism is his message. It's time for action is their message.
Oh, good point.
So that's a very good point. So he's overtaking their agenda and saying, yes, we're going to act, we're going to do great things, but under my framing.
No, that's fantastic. And you're right. Like the way that the entire thing's phrased, he is taking over their agenda and he's saying our model is better for your results.
Yeah. And it's very effective to do this in this linguistic way.
Mm.
It's very effective on the audience, and it's also very effective on the people who are watching it on TV.
Well, let's hope so. So, right, okay, well, thank you, Hugo, for joining me for this. I'm so glad you read through it, and I'm going to have to go through a few of it myself.
Yeah.
I really enjoy doing these sort of like little like weekend podcasts.
Yeah, me too.
It's you know, this is a subject that comes up a lot, but it's all quite esoteric, isn't it? But if you'd like to know more, you can go to lotuseaters.com. Hugo's written extensively on this, and you can become a member and support us, of course, and get access to a load of premium content. But in the meantime, we'll see you in the next podcast.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to FinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.